evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks very much for tuning in. A lot of trepidation around the globe, actually, about what's going to happen in Egypt tomorrow. The promise that's been made by the anti-Mubarak demonstrators, the people who have had enough of this dictator, is that tomorrow is the day of departure, I believe they're calling it, and they will be marching to the presidential palace, or the dictator's palace. The army is there. The army has promised not to fire on Egyptian citizens, but so did the army in China during Tiananmen. The hope is, of course, that even with all the violence that's occurred in the past several days, that the army will show restraint and that the people will show restraint to the extent that they can and that Mubarak will leave. And by the way, this hour, first hour tonight, is sponsored by Kelly DeForest. Her message, thanks loads to Mike and Kathy for doing this work and speaking for so many of us. Thanks also to my dear partner, Kev Ashley. You are so smart, funny, loving, and truly a truth seeker. From your dears, Gijo and Kelly. I hope I'm saying Kelly right, because the way it's spelled. All right. Thanks, Kelly. Very kind of you to sponsor an hour here. The Obama administration, apparently, is discussing behind the scenes, as it should, although the New York Times found out about it, with Egyptian officials this evening, this broke, a proposal for Hosni Mubarak to resign immediately, turning over power to a transitional government headed by Vice President Omar Suleiman. Now, so far the people of Egypt that have been asked about Suleiman want nothing to do with him either. He is, after all, Mubarak's vice president, vice dictator. His record on human rights and torture and relations with his own people is just about as miserable as Mubarak's. The problem here, if you get into real politics and away from the emotions for a moment, if Mubarak were to leave without some kind of caretaker government, and this is where it gets very dodgy, because people have different definitions of the word caretaker. If Mubarak were to leave with no caretaker government, how would the country run? It is that kind of chaos that warmongers and fascists love. People like, pick a name. I know, Glenn Beck. Not that Beck even could find Egypt on a map, I don't believe. But it's that kind of attitude. Chaos, chaos. This is what the more rabid members of the Soviet Union back in the day, the Politburo, the Soviet leadership, this is what they liked to see, was chaos, because they knew that in chaos, it's very easy to push a new strongman forward, one sponsored by people on the extreme left, like totalitarian communists, or people on the extreme right, like authoritarian fascists. It's very easy to get somebody in that position of leadership. So the issue here is, what's going to happen in Egypt when Mubarak's gone? Running a country of 85 million, especially one that has the problems that Egypt has, is not going to be easy. What to do? So the idea is now floating with the Egyptians and the Obama administration to turn power over to this transitional government headed by Omar Suleiman with the support of the Egyptian military. Now, this is according to Obama administration officials and Arab diplomats who say these talks are ongoing now. Officials from both governments, Egypt's and the United States, are continuing talks about a plan in which Suleiman, backed by Sami Inan, chief of the Egyptian armed forces, and Field Marshal Mohammed Tantawi, the defense minister, would immediately begin a process of constitutional reform. You think that would really happen? Turn the power over to us. I mean, the last three dictators in Egypt have all come from the military. Okay, all right. But we've kind of stipulated that there has to be something in place during this transitional period, right? The proposal being batted around by the Americans and the Egyptians also calls for the transitional government made up of the people we just mentioned to invite members from a broad range of opposition groups, including the banned Muslim Brotherhood. Now, if the Muslim Brotherhood sits in on these meetings, of course, or has anything to do with the leader on a leadership level, this will cause Glenn Beck to finally blow his brains out on television, probably. Because Glenn Beck, I understand, and the pig man, the drug-addled pig man, and the little puppet, Sean Hannity, and the rest of these thugs, O'Reilly, are using the Muslim Brotherhood to try to scare all their listeners and all their viewers. Oh, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood. Ooh, ooh, it has two words to be afraid of, Muslim and Brotherhood. Ah, ah. And it's working. You know, Fox, or I should say Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Network viewers and people listen to that garbage on the radio. As I've said before, they're first of all cowards. They're second of all liars. But third, they have no understanding of what's really going on. So they listen to Beck or these other cockroaches start talking, especially about something that none of these half-wits know anything about, Beck or any of these people. They know nothing about the Muslim Brotherhood. But as soon as you, Muslim Brotherhood, what is it they've been talking about the past few days? A caliphate. Oh, my God, it's going to be Muslims from Gibraltar. Is that the name of that country? All the way over to, Pakistan. Oh, my God, billion Muslims. They're going to come over here and eat our children. They're going to bomb you. They're going to take all your money and your gold, and they're going to rape your men, and they're going to kill your women. Son of a bitch! Cowards! But I digress. The Muslim Brotherhood will be included in an interim government. And these military people and the Muslim Brotherhood are supposed to work to open up the country's electoral system in an effort to bring about, don't laugh, free and fair elections in September. Kind of like the free and fair elections that were held in Iraq? Oh, well. Senior administration officials, those are our people, said the proposal is one of several options under discussion with high-level Egyptian officials about Mr. Mubarak. Though not him directly, they're not talking with him. They're trying to convince him to step down. Now, the guy is 82. He has a horrible dye job. You take a look at his hair and you think, Jesus Christ, look at that. Not a gray hair. Not a gray hair on an 82-year-old man. Wow, that's pretty cool. God only knows where his mind is. And not that people who are 82 are, I hope I'm doing this program when I'm 82. Well, not really. Nothing against people who are 82. But Mubarak, he just has that appearance, doesn't he? Like, I'm not sure I'm here. Or where am I? Is this Egypt? I'm not sure. He's a megalomaniac. We do know that, like so many of these dictators are. I mean, when you've been the dictator for 30 years and all of a sudden your people hit the streets and say, get out of town. That's a little humiliating, right? So nobody knows what Mubarak is going to do. They're not talking to him. This is like the discussion that adult children may have when grandma is 92 and, you know, she puts the cat in the refrigerator at night and tries to let the milk go outside. And they all sit down and they say, what are we going to do with grandma? Oh, God, well, don't let her hear you. That's kind of what they're doing to Mubarak. So what's going to happen? More when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen. Well, I want you down the road. Amazing.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
21 past the hour. While these discussions are going on in Washington and Cairo about what to do, the officials are saying that the outcome of these talks depends on several factors, not the least of which is what happens in Egypt tomorrow, on Friday, on the day of departure, as they're calling it. If violence breaks out, and it's pretty obvious that the Mubarak regime has salted the crowd with people who are trying to incite violence, they must watch the Glenn Beck program or the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network. Although they're beating the hell out of members of the press, including a crew from Fox News. That crew, two of them, wound up in the hospital severely beaten. But anyway, the military's pledge not to fire on the Egyptian people is going to be tested tomorrow. And what happens tomorrow will determine, I think, to a large extent, what happens to Egypt. During a Senate hearing today, both Democrats and Republicans questioned a senior CIA official about when the CIA and other agencies notified Obama of this looming crisis. You know, like, okay, when did you tell the president this was about to happen? And whether intelligence officers even monitor social networking websites and internet forums to gauge popular sentiment in Egypt or any place. Stephanie O'Sullivan, the CIA official that was sitting in front of the intelligence panel, Senate Intelligence Committee, responded that the agency, the CIA, has been tracking instability in Egypt for some time and had concluded that the government in Cairo was in an, quote, untenable situation, end quote. But, Ms. O'Sullivan said, we didn't know what the triggering mechanism would be. We didn't know. We had no idea. We thought there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We thought the Iranians had nuclear bombs. We don't know a goddamn thing, but keep giving us billions of dollars. We know nothing. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, we do. We know all about the anti-war protesters in Chicago and Madison in Minneapolis. We know about them. But we don't know anything about what's going on in the world. We're just as surprised as you are, senators. Goddamn freaks. The CIA. You're very good, though, aren't you, CIA, in renting airplanes to send people to different countries to be tortured, right? But you don't know when a country of 86 million is about to goddamn erupt. We don't know nothing. What? What are we supposed to know? Stephanie O'Sullivan. We didn't know what the triggering mechanism would be. What was the triggering mechanism, Stephanie? Huh? No food? No work? No future? A dictator? What does the CIA do? For God's sake, what does it do besides send people to be tortured, torture itself, spy on Americans? Why do we have a CIA? Anybody know? One senior Egyptian official, citing clauses in the Egyptian Constitution, said that can't be done. You can't remove the president and have the vice president take over because the Speaker of Parliament would succeed the president. Well, your Constitution also bars torture, you half-ass. So, it probably also guarantees a living wage to people and health insurance. Our Constitution forbids that. In an interview with Christiane Amanpour, Mubarak said that he was, his words, fed up with being president. But he couldn't step down, get this, for fear of sowing chaos in the country.
Oh, Christiane, they love me so much that if I leave with all this pressure, the country may go up in flames. You may see riots in Freedom Square over here, in Cairo, in Alexandria, and wherever. No, Christiane, I must stay. My people love me.
We'll be right back.
Got that mystery, Lord, I need a plan. All I got is this compromise and a bag full of alibis. Lord, as empty as a bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. And thanks again to Kelly DeForest. She is the sponsor of this hour. And she thanks Kathy and me for doing what we do. And she says, thanks also to my dear partner, Kev Ashley. You are so smart, funny, loving, and truly a truth seeker. From your dears, Gijo and Kelly. Thanks to you, Kelly, for sponsoring this hour. So, the CIA is asked today, when did you tell President Obama?
Well, we didn't. Somebody else did.
Who?
CNN?
And by the way, Mubarak says that, you know, he doesn't want to leave Egypt. He wants to die in Egypt, which is understandable. I mean, don't you want to die in America? You know, you're an American, right? Don't you want to die? If Mubarak is serious about that, of course, he didn't say when, but he's the one that said it. He said he wants to die in Egypt. Uh-huh. Does that give anybody any ideas over there? Defense Secretary Robert Gates has made, according to Times, three calls since the weekend to Egypt's powerful defense minister, Field Marshal Tantawi. Is that a real name? Tantawi. Field Marshal Tantawi. This sounds kind of Teutonic, doesn't it? Field Marshal Tantawi. Anyway, he served on the coalition side in the 1991 Gulf War. That was one of George Herbert Walker Bush's bought and paid for butt buddies to go in and kill people in Iraq, right? So this guy has no loyalty to his own people. You know, give him enough money, Tantawi, field marshal, and he'll behead his own mother if there's enough money. Pentagon officials declined today to describe the specifics of these calls. Three calls by Defense Secretary Gates to Field Marshal, I'm going to cut your head off. Who knows what they talked about? The officials indicated that Mr. Gates's messages were focused on more than urging the Egyptian military to exercise restraint. Gosh, let me think. What could they have talked about? Oh. Egyptian officials, or officials familiar with the dialogue between the administration and Cairo, according to people who speak without attribution, officials familiar with the dialogue between the Obama administration and Cairo say that American officials have told Egyptian officials that if they support another strongman to replace Mubarak, without a specific plan and timetable for moving toward democratic elections, the U.S. Congress might react by
freezing military assistance. That'll fool. That'll fix them, huh? No soup for you. No guns for you. No bombs for you. No fighter jets for you. No. Go to the end of the line. Nothing for you.
Woo! We are some tough asses, aren't we? The U.S. Congress might react by freezing military assistance. And today the Senate passed a resolution. And I'll just bet when the United States Senate passes a resolution, everybody in Freedom Square in Cairo, they all stop and go, wait, wait, wait. The U.S. Congress just passed a resolution. Hold on. Stop, stop. Wait, wait, wait. Stop. Stop yelling. Stop shooting. Stop demanding freedom. Stop, stop, stop. Put your signs down. The U.S. Congress just passed a resolution. Woo-hoo!
What does it say?
It calls on Mubarak to begin the transfer of power to, quote, an inclusive interim caretaker government, end quote. Really? It says that? God, you mean everything that we've done here had finally all the death and the everything. Inshallah, this is wonderful. Oh, my God. I don't think the people in the square give a rat's ass about what the U.S. Congress does. Do you? Oh, and also today, Secretary of State Clinton called King Abdullah of Jordan. Hello, King! To say the United States is looking forward to working with your new cabinet. Mr. King, how you doing, right? Recently announced. And to... Now listen, I want to underline the importance of the relationship between Jordan and the United States. King? Hello, King? All I hear is gunfire. King, are you there? A bunch of screaming. Let's switch over to Yemen. Hello, Mr. Dictator of Yemen. I'd like to say her name, but I can't pronounce it. Mr. Listen, this is Hillary Clinton calling. Just wanted to say that we really support your government, but, you know, a lot of people in the streets. So if you do make a transition, got to be Democrat. Hello? Hello? Operator? Seems like the line is dead. Who do we have left to call? Miss CIA person sitting there in the witness chair here before the Senate Intelligence Committee, can you tell us at what point you informed the President of the United States that Egypt was erupting? When? 4 days after it started happening. Okay. All right. Good show. Oh, and you knew this was going to happen, right? You knew this was going to happen. The counter-protesters, the Mubarak thugs, the people driving through crowds of anti-government protesters in vans, and you see bodies going all over. The people, the real bastards, the killers, the ones who used to be employed by the CIA, probably still are, but are now partly employed by Mubarak's thugs. Who knows? A thug is a thug is a thug. I wouldn't be surprised if half of them are on the Blackwater payroll. But those people are now screaming, and you knew this was going to happen. They're screaming, Jew! At foreign journalists. Anderson Cooper. Jew! Christiane Amanpour. Jew! People from Al Jazeera. Jew! Jew! Apparently spurred by Egyptian state television accusations that Israeli spies are behind the protests. It's Israel! It's the Jews! Now, most Jews around the world, especially the United States, are, you know, when they heard this today, found this out today, like, okay, so what's new? Of course, they're saying we're right. Al Jazeera said in a report on this website today, quote, Egyptian state television has actively tried to foment the unrest by reporting that Israeli spies on the unrest have infiltrated the city, which explains why many of the gangs who attack reporters shout, Yehudi! 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 Which I guess is Arabic for Jew. Now, Al Jazeera is reporting that. The Obama administration has condemned such attacks on foreign journalists and called on the Mubarak regime to rein them in. Hosni, now, goddammit, you're going to have to back up a little bit here. You know, Katie Couric is cute. We don't want any acid thrown in her face. We know what you people do over there. Come on now. Come on, Hosni. Pull your boys back just a little bit. Come on. The Jews are behind it, huh? I'll give you a list of Jews. ABC News international correspondent Christiane Amanpour said her car was surrounded by men banging on the sides and windows, a rock thrown through the windshield shattering glass on the occupants. They escaped without injury. ABC producer and cameraman driving were carjacked at a checkpoint, driven to a compound where they were surrounded by men who threatened to behead them. They were able to convince the men to release them without any harm. ABC Bloomberg's Lara Satrakian, attacked by protesters. These are all Jews. CNN's Anderson Cooper, a producer and camera operator, was set upon by people who began punching them and trying to break their camera. Another CNN reporter, Hala Gorani, said she was shoved against a fence when demonstrators rode in on horses and camels and feared she was going to get trampled. Fox Business Channel's Ashley Webster reported that security officials burst into a room where he and a camera operator were observing the demonstrations from the balcony. They forced the camera inside the room. He called the situation very unnerving and said via Twitter that he was trying to lay low. Fox News Channel foreign correspondent Greg Palcott and producer Olag Wilg were hospitalized in Cairo after being attacked by protesters. CBS News Katie Couric harassed by protesters. CBS Newsman Mark Strassman said he and a camera operator were attacked as they attempted to get close to the rock throwing and take pictures. The camera operator, who he would not name, was punched repeatedly and hit in the face with mace. These are all Jews. I've got some more when we come back.
Liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, and this hour has been sponsored by Kelly DeForest, who thanks Kathy and me for doing the work we do. And she writes, thanks also to my dear partner, Kev Ashley. You are so smart, funny, loving, and truly a truth seeker. From your dears, Gijo and Kel. Kelly. 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 Okay. Thanks, Kelly. The Mubarak regime is now saying that the Jews are behind the unrest, if that's not an Orwellian word. And the Jews are inspiring the media people like Katie Couric and Anderson Cooper and Hala Gorani and Christiane Amanpour to do all this. So let's go with some more Jews. CBS News' Lara Logan reports she was marched back to her hotel at gunpoint when she and a crew were taking pictures of protests. Time magazine reports that Lara Logan was detained by Egyptian police. Two New York Times journalists have been arrested. A Times spokeswoman said that the two journalists were detained by military police overnight in Cairo and are now free. Washington Post foreign editor Douglas Gell wrote Thursday that witnesses say Lila Fadel, the newspaper's Cairo bureau chief, and photographer Linda Davidson, quote, were among two dozen journalists arrested this morning by military police. Fadel and Davidson have since been released. BBC's Jerome Boehm, also targeted by protesters. BBC also reported their correspondent Rupert Wingfield Hayes' car was forced off the road in Cairo by a group of angry men. He was detained by the men who handed him off to secret police agents who handcuffed and blindfolded him and an unnamed colleague and took them to an interrogation room. They were released after 3 hours. Reporter Jean-François Lepine of Canada's CBC All-French RDI network said that he and a cameraman were surrounded by a mob that began hitting them until they were rescued by the Egyptian army. These are all Jews! Did you not know this? The Toronto Globe and Mail said on its website that one of its reporters, Sonia Verma, said the military had, quote, commandeered us in our car in Cairo. Two Associated Press correspondents were roughed up. AP's Nasser Gamil mentioned in one article. Reuters' Simon Hanna tweeted today that a gang of thugs stormed the news organization's Cairo office and smashed windows. The website of Belgium's Le Soir newspaper said Belgian reporter Serge Dumont, whose real name is Maurice Sarfati, was beaten on Wednesday. John Bjorgvinson, a correspondent for RUV, Iceland's national broadcaster, but on assignment for Swiss television in Cairo, was attacked on Tuesday as he and a crew were filming. Danish media reported that Danish senior Middle East correspondent Stefan Jensen was beaten today by pro-Mubarak supporters with clubs while reporting live on the phone to Danish TV2 News from Cairo. Two Swedish reporters beaten. A photojournalist from German ZDF, a reporter for Turkey's Fox Television, his Egyptian cameraman and their driver were abducted by men with knives while filming protests Wednesday. Egyptian police later rescued them. Turkey's state broadcaster TRT said its Egypt correspondent Metin Turan was beaten. Greek print journalist was stabbed in the leg with a screwdriver. Petros Papakonstantinou said, I was spotted by Mubarak supporters. They beat me with batons on the head and stabbed me in the leg. A Greek freelance photographer punched in the face by a group of men who stopped him on the street near Tahrir Square and smashed some of his equipment. In addition, five Chinese journalists were briefly detained after authorities found bulletproof vests in their luggage, along with more than 20 walkie-talkies and satellite phones. They were allowed to leave after the equipment was confiscated. A correspondent and cameraman working for Russia's Zvezda television channel were detained by men in plain clothes and held overnight. French international news channel France 24 said three of its journalists had been detained while covering protests and were being held by military intelligence services. French photojournalist from SIPA press agency Alfred Iago Zadeh is being treated by anti-government protesters after being wounded. Police arrested four Israeli journalists for... There they are! They're the Jews! I knew it! I knew it! Police arrested four Israeli journalists for allegedly violating the curfew in Cairo and for entering the country on tourist visas! Ha ha! Ha ha! Al Jazeera reported today that two of its reporters were attacked en route to Cairo airport. Al Arabiya's Ahmed Abdullah was beaten. Al Arabiya correspondent Ahmed Bahano in Cairo was beaten while covering a pro-Mubarak demonstration. Another unidentified correspondent was also attacked. Another network reporter said on the air that her colleague Ahmed Abdel Hadi was seized by what appeared to be pro-Mubarak supporters near Tahrir Square, forced in a car and driven away. Men in plainclothes surround the office of Sassan Abu Hussein, deputy editor of the Egyptian magazine October, after she called into a television program to report on violence against protesters. And a group of men described as, quote, plainclothes police, end quote, attacked the headquarters of the independent daily Al-Shawruk in Cairo today, the paper reported. Reporter Mohammed Kayal and photographer Magdi Ibrahim were injured. A lot of Jews in there using all kinds of names. Norwegian names, Icelandic names, Arabic names, French names, Canadian names. The Israelis have enough to answer for where it concerns the Palestinians. But to say, as the Mubarak psychopaths are now saying, sounds like something Glenn Beck would say. To say, as the Mubarak psychopaths are saying, these Jewish journalists, they're stirring everything up. It's their fault. Is further proof of fill in the blank. We'll be back. Stay with us. Show, and this hour is sponsored by, excuse me, by Jude Morford of Women's Standing in Seattle. She writes, Mike and Kathy, be sure to take the CD of the Doobie Brothers with you on the cruise. Smiling in gratitude, knowing that you would be among friends and floating on the sea of tranquility. We're not going to the moon. Maybe we are. Peace, your friends, Jude. Thanks, Jude. It is, let's see, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, let's see, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's about 5 o'clock in the morning in Cairo. the email here. The noon prayer protest will begin if it's, let's see, there's 7 hours difference. So it's 5 o'clock in the, 5 o'clock in the morning? Yeah, 5 o'clock in the morning. Noon prayer hour protest to begin in 5 hours. Whatever we can do here, phone calls, email gatherings, anything that supports the pro demonstrators, now's the time. This is from Black. Black, yeah. You know, another thing that occurred to me, the violence against journalists, the violence against other Egyptians by the thugs that Mubarak has unleashed. In the meantime, the military has orders to just stand there. This is more or less the same way that Dick Cheney ordered our military not to move when we were being attacked by a Bush-Cheney-engineered assault on this country on September 11th, 2001. Same thing. Same thing exactly. But why is there surprise? I don't understand why anyone should be surprised about the violence, especially perpetrated against journalists. The journalists are doing nothing but documenting. They're not, you know, journalists traditionally are not pro, they're not anti, they're not for, they're not against, it's not this faction or that faction. The duty of a journalist is to report, is to document, is to provide a record of what occurred. A surgeon is to take care of whatever surgery needs to be done. The surgeon is not going to say, well, now let's see, this stitch here in the lung, this is a conservative stitch. And over here, now this one in the spleen, this would be a libertarian stitch, you know. So the attack on journalists, I think, is very simple. It's an attempt to close the window of through which we all observe what this murderous bastard is doing. But he's our murderous bastard. I don't understand why American media or the American government is acting so nonplussed about. I guess it's because he wasn't supposed to do this. He was supposed to be a good dictator. Goddamn it, Mubarak, don't do what our other dictators did. For God's sake. We give you $1 billion, $2 billion a year. I mean, how much hashish can you buy with that? I mean, you can have a good, great time. Don't do dictator stuff, okay? But do torture those people we're sending. You know, I mean, torture them. They're just other Arab or Muslims or other Muslims. Just torture them. Oh, just torture the bastards, you know. Why is anyone surprised at the violence? I mean, we rely on Mubarak for violence. We encourage him to violence. We explain to him, Mubi, look, come here. Come over here. Come over here. Listen to me. The Geneva Convention crap, we did away with that in the last administration. Don't pay any attention. Pay no attention to treaties and agreements and no torture and whatever your constitution says. It's in your constitution, right? It's in our rule of law, too. So what? Who cares? Come on, Mubi, do it. Torture for us. And then all this surprise. Oh my God, he got Katie Couric. What? Quote, the Arab world is on fire, end quote. Al Jazeera reported on January 27th, while throughout the region, Western allies, quote, are quickly losing their influence, end quote. The shockwave was set in motion by the dramatic uprising in Tunisia that drove out a Western-backed dictator, with reverberations, especially in Egypt, where demonstrators overwhelmed a dictator's brutal police. Observers compared the events to the toppling of Russian domains in 1989, but there are important differences. Crucially, no Mikhail Gorbachev exists among the great powers that support the Arab dictators. Rather, Washington and its allies keep to the well-established principle that democracy is acceptable only insofar as it conforms to strategic and economic objectives. Fine in enemy territory, up to a point, but not in our backyard, please, unless it is properly tamed. One 1989 comparison has some validity. Romania, where Washington maintained its support for Nicolae Ceausescu, the most vicious of the East European dictators, until the allegiance became untenable. Then Washington hailed his overthrow while the past was erased. That is a standard pattern. Ferdinand Marcos, Jean-Claude Duvalier, Chun Doo-hwan, Suharto, and many other useful gangsters. It may be underway in the case of Hosni Mubarak, along with routine efforts to try to ensure that a successor regime will not veer too far from the approved path. The current hope appears to be Mubarak loyalist General Omar Suleiman, just named Egypt's vice president. Suleiman, the longtime head of the intelligence services, is despised by the rebelling public almost as much as the dictator himself. The common refrain among pundits is that fear of radical Islam requires opposition to democracy on pragmatic grounds. While not without some merit, the formulation is misleading. The general threat has always been independence. In the Arab world, the U.S. and its allies have regularly supported radical Islamists, sometimes to prevent the threat of secular nationalism. Who am I quoting here? Who is this? A familiar example is Saudi Arabia, the ideological center of radical Islam and of Islamic terror. Another in a long list is Zia-ul-Haq, the most brutal of Pakistan's dictators and President Reagan's favorite, who carried out a program of radical Islamization with Saudi funding. Marwan Muasher, former Jordanian official, now director of Middle East Research for the Carnegie Endowment, said, quote, "The traditional argument put forward in and out of the Arab world is that there is nothing wrong. Everything is under control. While this line of thinking entrenched forces argue that opponents and outsiders calling for reform are exaggerating the conditions on the ground. Therefore, the public can be dismissed. The doctrine traces far back and generalizes worldwide to U.S. home territory as well. In the event of unrest, tactical shifts may be necessary, but always with an eye to reasserting control." Who am I quoting? Who am I quoting? Does anybody know what kind of radical talk this is? No, it's not Chris Hedges. Sarah Palin? We'll be right back.
I'm walking down the street like Lucky LaRue. Got my hand in my pocket, thinking about you. I ain't a hurting nobody. I ain't a hurting no one. There's 300 men in the state of Tennessee. They're waiting to die. They won't never be free. I ain't hurting nobody.
Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Arab opinion is so hostile to Washington's policies that a majority, almost 60%, think regional security would be enhanced if Iran had nuclear weapons. The dictators in the Middle East support us. Their subjects can be ignored unless they break their chains, and then policy must be adjusted. Regarding WikiLeaks, perhaps the most remarkable WikiLeaks revelations have to do with Pakistan, reviewed by foreign policy analyst Fred Brantham in Truth Dig. The cables reveal that the U.S. Embassy is well aware that Washington's war in Afghanistan and Pakistan not only intensifies rampant anti-Americanism, but also, quote, risks destabilizing the Pakistani state, end quote, and even raises the threat of the ultimate nightmare that nuclear weapons might fall into the hands of Islamic terrorists. Again, the revelations in WikiLeaks, quote, should create a comforting feeling that officials are not asleep at the switch, end quote, while Washington marches stalwartly towards disaster. It's Noam Chomsky, of course. That's why you had a hard time understanding him. That's why it's difficult to read a linguist. He's forgotten words that you and I will never know. This hour is sponsored by Jude, who suggests that we take the new CD of the Doobie Brothers with us on the Progressive Cruise and watch out for Somali pirates. Peace, your friends, Jude. Thank you, Jude, for the sponsorship. I'll tell you what. What time is it? 10:30. It's 5:30 in Cairo, in Egypt. Friday prayers at noon. Which will be what? 5 o'clock in the morning here. So when you wake up tomorrow morning, we get up at 6 a.m. to get Molly off to school. I hate turning CNN on in the morning, but I guess we'll have to tomorrow, right, Kathy? All right, I want to shift away from this for a while. There's a very good article at truthout.org. It's a news analysis, The Egyptian Tinderbox, How Banks and Investors Are Starving the Third World. it's too in-depth for me to get into in this program, but I strongly recommend it. Truthout.org, How Banks and Investors Are Starving the Third World. It's just a mind-boggling analysis of what's, the latest. You know, if it's not diamonds, if it's not blood diamonds, it's oil. If it's not oil, it's genetically engineered food. If it's not that, it's food in general. If it's not food in general, it's trying to buy up the globe's freshwater supply. You know what is really needed, don't you? You know what is really needed. Just a global revolution that erases just everything. All the religions, all the political systems, just erase it all and try to start from a rational perspective. And that would be that we're all in this together. Take some of these people and hang them with their own bootstraps. That'll cure that bootstrap crap, you know. I pulled myself up with my bootstraps. I didn't need the goddamn government. Okay, here, hold still while I put your bootstraps around your neck, and let's see if they'll hold you up. How's that? Erase it all and start again. Of course, that can't be done, can it? That's why we have death. That's a form of erasure. I mean self-death, you know, when it finally becomes too intense. When you realize that the systems are not functioning, there's always the arms of Morpheus waiting for you, right? All right, when we come back, we're going to move to a different level in this program. Even more insane. And also, we're going to take some phone calls. So if you want to call in. By the way, Brad Friedman will be here tomorrow night. Well, not here, but I mean, he'll be doing the program for us tomorrow night and all next week. So we're going to open up the phone lines if you want to get some comments in. Give us a call, 877-996-2556. And Kathy, I don't want this first right winger in here. Jude, who sends good wishes and tells us to take our new Doobie Brothers CD with us on the Progressive Cruise. We're going to do that. We're going to drive people crazy. We're going to play doobies all over wherever we're going. Thanks, Jude. From the Salt Lake City Tribune, there is a program in Salt Lake City that was put together by the legislature out there to assist people who can't afford to pay their utility bills. Everybody chips in a little bit on their bill. And a Republican, of course, wants it stopped. This is how the Salt Lake Tribune presents it. Utility companies could be banned from assessing a fee on customers' utility bills to assist low-income customers who can't pay their bills under legislation being proposed by Representative Carl Wimmer, a Republican. Currently, both Questar and Rocky Mountain Power, the two energy companies there, add the extra fee. But Wimmer, a Republican from Harriman, Utah, says it's wrong. It's wrong for utilities to be, quote, taking money from their customers without asking first, end quote. Would Jesus have done that? Representative Carl Wimmer, Republican, said it was an issue he became aware of when a constituent brought it to his attention that the fees were being assessed on their bills. Wimmer said, they don't give the utility permission to take their money and just give it to someone else. If the companies want to raise the money, customers should sign up and agree to the extra charge. Jesus wouldn't do this. Darren Shepard, a spokesman for Questar, said the average fee for the utility's customers to take care of people who can't afford their bills, the average fee is a dime, 10 cents a month, or about $1.20 a year. But collected from all the gas companies' customers, it generates $1.5 million to help qualifying low-income residents around the state. Those individuals can get up to $37 a month toward their gas bill. Woo! You know what our gas bill here at the Malloy compound and studio was in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains last month? Close to $500. So Questar and Rocky Mountain Power, with a display of bubbling largesse that is just almost impossible to comprehend, they give low-income families $37 on their gas bill. Oh, bless you. Bless you, Questar. Bless you, Rocky Mountain, whatever. Rocky Mountain Power. Oh, my God. The generosity of these two mega capitalist gouging filthy goddamn corporations is almost too much to bear. $37. Woo! But there's something even worse than that, and that is this filthy, filthy Republican Carl Wimmer, who wants to end that nonsense. God damn it, use your bootstraps. Your bootstraps will take care. Pull yourself up with your bootstraps. What is wrong with you? The fee was approved by the Public Service Commission last year, and the company began collecting the dime in August. 10 cents. The spokesman for Questar said,
"We were just recently made aware of Representative Wimmer's bill in the legislature to make this stop. We will comply with the wishes of the legislature and the regulators."
A dime. A dime from everybody. And then the poor folk in Utah get $37 per month toward their gas bill. I mean, I don't know who to condemn to hell first. Would it be Representative Carl Wimmer, the Republican pig, or would it be these two massive power companies, Questar and Rocky Mountain Power? Now, watch, somebody will send me an email and say, but Mike, those are co-ops. I don't think so. Not something named Rocky Mountain Power or something named Questar. $37. I don't know what the average bill is in Utah in the winter for people who heat with gas. I know what the average bill here in Georgia is for people who heat with gas in the winter. So this filthy, filthy Republican, Carl Wimmer. I bet he's one of those types that believes you should be able to take guns into churches, but not the Mormon tabernacle, you know. I don't know if he's Mormon or not. 10 cents, and he's going to introduce a bill to stop that nonsense. $1.20. $1.20 a year. 10 cents. What year is this? 1903? Mr. Wimmer, burn in hell. You and your psychopathic brethren have established a hell, right? Burn there. John Boehner. Remember John Edwards? Remember the John Edwards scandal where the National Enquirer put out the story and everybody denied it, and Boehner, oh, he was shocked, shocked, I tell you. After all, he was running for president. Shocked, I tell you, that he was boinking his photojournalist friend who was made a movie, a die, whatever. Now it's John Boehner's turn. Yeah, according to the Enquirer, Boehner is embroiled in a bombshell sex scandal involving at least two different women. Capitol Hill insiders and political bloggers have been buzzing about an upcoming New York Times probe. Detailing an alleged affair that the 61-year-old married father of two had with pretty Washington lobbyist Lizbeth Lyons. Pretty Washington lobbyist Lizbeth Lyons. There's a kind of alliteration there that's just pretty Washington. Here it comes. Lobbyist Lizbeth Lyons. Ew. And an Enquirer investigation has uncovered a bedroom encounter that Boehner, second in line of succession to the presidency, allegedly had with Lee LaMora, a 46-year-old former press secretary to ex-Colorado Congressman Joel Heffley. Boehner and his wife Deborah have been married for 37 years, but she has shunned the Capitol social scene, and he is often seen out on the town without her. Contacted by the Enquirer in late January, just passed, about the cheating charges, Deborah, Mrs. Boehner to you, stood by her man and would not comment about the explosive allegations. But, the Enquirer learned that Deborah was nowhere to be seen when the ruggedly handsome congressman attended a casino party at the home of a D.C. lobbyist in August and reportedly hooked up? With pretty congressional press secretary Lee LaMora. Pretty. For the full story and to see exclusive pictures, it's in the New Enquirer, on sale now. So how long? Anybody want to start a pool? Maybe over in the Malloy Tunnel Vision chat room over there at Ustream, maybe they can start a pool as to how long Boehner will be Speaker of the House. Is that why he's always crying?
I know I'm going to get caught. I know I'm going to get caught. I'm going to get caught. Oh. And my kids will never speak to me again. I know I'm going to get caught. Oh, then I'll be just like Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and all the rest of them. Well, wait a minute. Henry Hyde? Wait a second. And well, you know, my little gopher boy that follows me around there, Eric Cantor. I mean, you know, he's got a couple on the side, too. Well, what the hell? I mean, it's just what we do here in Washington. How do you like my tan?
Once again, this hour has been sponsored by Jude. Thank you, Jude, who suggested we take the Doobie Brothers CD with us on the Progressive Cruise. She sends peace, Jude does. Actually, probably what we ought to do is be taking, instead of the Doobie Brothers, we ought to be taking handguns. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I can't get over that. Mubarak wants to die on Egyptian soil. Okay, all right. That's, you know, okay. Tom is in Arizona. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, hey, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, a quick shout-out to Tony and Ed. They're listening in Boyd City across town from me.
Oh, okay.
Actually, you've got about a dozen people in this little place listening to you. Anyway, secondly, thank you for bringing up about the Egyptian affairs.
Yeah.
And as I told you the last time I called, this is a libertarian dream. And let's exploit it. These people think government is bad. So let's get the point across that they can't have their cake and eat it too. Well, then, what the hell is the cake for? Well, you know, huh?
No, no.
Call me here, bro.
No, I hear you.
And take that Doobie Brothers tape with you, man, on the cruise, too. I wish I could go.
Yeah, I wish you could, too, Tom.
I'm going to get you next year. You have it next year. By that time, we'll have our stuff squared away.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, the decision was made to put this together way above my pay grade. I mean, I'm happy as a pig in slop, though, that I got invited.
Yeah, but tell me this, though, about the Egyptian thing.
Oh, okay.
If you plant a word on a fertile ground, they will grow. And you're about the most fertile ground that I know, okay?
Okay.
So, you're really serious. I'm serious.
Yeah.
You know, you're fertile, man. You are 50-something years old having a 6-year-old girl. You're fertile ground, dude.
Yeah, well, that's true. Now, be careful, Tom. Don't cuss. Don't say bad words.
I will not cuss, even though you're scared.
Okay.
I'm scared, Mike, because I'm disciplined. Okay. I'm an ex-military.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Now, you are fertile, and you're planting seeds, because Mubarak, you're talking about, he's got dark hair, no gray hair, right?
Yeah, right.
And so you're seeing, you know, the whole implication. And now the Jews, you're saying, right, that point about you made about the Jews across the nation? Remember that point you made with J Street? You said something about.
Oh no! What I said was the Mubarak thugs now are saying that the Jews are reporting to the world all this bad stuff. So I went down the list of all these Jews, like Anderson Cooper and
right,
you know, right,
right. Yeah, so that's awesome. Keep it up, man. I'm done talking. Thank you so much for your time, man.
All right. Appreciate it. You have a good night, Tom. Call us here. 877-996-2556. You got to call us. You got to check in. Hello, Nora.
Hi, Tom. I called to report in about our Stop FBI report. I called you, Tom! God, I'm half out of it here.
Yeah.
Can you tell I'm used to listening to Tom in the afternoon and you at night? I called you by the other man's name. Oh, my God.
No, I didn't.
Stephanie would laugh her head off, my morning girl.
I didn't even know you did that. That's all right.
Guess what you did last night?
What I said.
You said that Stokely Carmichael was the one that called chickens coming home to roost with Kennedy.
Yeah, no, it was Malcolm X.
I knew you misspoke.
Yeah.
You didn't mean to say that, right?
No.
So anyway, I'm calling in to say how great our protests were on the 25th, even though it was like 10 or 20 below. We had almost 200 people here in Minneapolis.
All right.
300 in Chicago and in about 10 other cities and in four other nations.
Wow. Which four? Do you know?
There was Melbourne, Australia, Vancouver, Ireland, and I forgot the fourth one.
Ah.
But so now, guess what they're trying to do now on the Senate on February 28th?
What?
They want to reinstate a new Patriot Act.
Oh, yeah.
They want to review the Patriot Act so they can redo it.
Yeah, I heard some Democrats are trying to help rewrite it so that liberals will be slammed in prison. See, the Democratic Party, Nora, is your enemy. You do know that.
The party, I know certain people that are really good, like my beloved Congressman Keith Ellison that I envisioned.
There are individuals who are good, just like the whole human race sucks, but there are people who are valuable in the human race. But the Democratic Party is your enemy. You've got to keep that in mind. The Democratic Party wants to smother you. The Republican Party doesn't even acknowledge your existence, but the Democratic Party wants to smother you, and I want you to remember that always and forever, Nora. People like you and me who were good Democrats for so many years, who were good little liberals for so many years, we've got to realize now that liberalism and the Democratic Party together have committed massive suicide. So what we have to do now, people like you and me, Nora, we have to become democratic socialists. We have to get real. We have to stop giggly crapping around here and get real. And reality exists within the framework of democratic socialism. That's the direction that we have to go. Nora, I called you by somebody else's name. Damn. Nora, I'll talk to you later. Thanks for checking in. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Let me get rid of that real quick. CNN, was it yesterday? One of the newscaster women. This one that took over for Rick Sanchez. what is her name? Oh my God! I think it was her. She named Donald Rumsfeld the most intriguing person of the day for her. The most intriguing person of the day, Donald Rumsfeld. Why? Because she said, now she said this on the air, the Washington Post quotes him as saying in his new book, well, he says, regarding the first days after the invasion of Iraq, about the weapons of mass destruction, we know where they are, referring to those suspected stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. So because he has a book out, and because he said that, I forget this anchor person's name, but she said, we are naming Donald Rumsfeld as the most intriguing person of the day. You know, and usually when I turn on CNN or MSNBC in the afternoon, I just want to reach into the television set and commit little tiny acts of mayhem and to the people I'm saying. So I tend to stay away from it in the afternoon, but... Anyway, regarding that, Paul writes, Mike, if Dr. Strangelove were not so sick and evil, he would be hilarious. That would be Rumsfeld. It's too bad the 2 million dead Iraqi people, mostly innocent civilians and their families, would not agree with him. We know where they are. It's too bad the ancient city of Baghdad, with over 7 million inhabitants, had to be disrupted and bombed in an expensive military operation. It's too bad the U.S. had to then spend a lot of cash to fix up the areas bombed in that expensive military operation. It's too bad that the 7 million people of Baghdad had to live in daily terror since 2003 to the present in a war zone. It is too bad the ignorant hillbilly football-watching, beer-guzzling morons of America who supported this idiotic illegal action against Iraq have no idea of the incredible rich history of this ancient country. It's too bad they do not know that Baghdad was founded around 762 AD and it's about 1,200 years old. It's too bad they do not know these things and that they don't care to know these things. Has our society been enriched or enlightened by our contact with the Iraqi people over all these years of the conflict? No, heaven forbid. We must keep demonizing and ostracizing these people so we do not care if we have to butcher another couple million to satisfy whoever happens to be in charge and their idiotic vendettas and bloodlust. Bloodlust. Paul. Isn't it interesting, in a very macabre, twisted, degenerate sort of way, isn't it now, isn't it, that we are in a, we're in a war, we're in two wars actually, and we just don't talk about it. Do you ever read it? Do you ever look in the paper and read the names of the dead in the New York Times, or maybe they have something similar in your paper, the names of the dead? I can't help but, since I read the Times cover to cover, okay, I not completely, but I certainly do the A section. And I see that on the days that the Times publishes it, Names of the Dead. I mean, just that title, Names of the Dead, I don't know, it just sounds almost, somehow, it just sounds very... medieval, Names of the Dead. When I see that, I get images of hooded monks working in catacombs someplace underneath castles in Middle Europe, arranging bones names of the dead. But when you read that section, that little tiny 8-point type section of the Times, and you read those names, you know, and then look at the ages right next to them, where they're from, you know, 22, 21, 20, 19, 27, 28, 18, 18, 18, 22, 21, specialist this, Lance Corporal that, PFC this, you know, and it's just, I don't know. I just don't have the words for it, to read that and to know that these are people dying for absolutely nothing honorable. Nothing. Not that they are not honorable. I guess, I don't even know anymore, but they are dying because of greed and a dying global empire making, you know, last stabs at trying to say, no, we're still number one. Somebody tell me again what the point was of Afghanistan. I'm serious. What the point was of Iraq. And we still have people, you know, 21, 19, 18, 26, 25, 24, dying. Names of the dead. Names of the dead. And then the Times gives the names of the dead. You know, Jose Garcia, Johnny Davis, Timothy Smith, Ahmed Browning. And I read that, and I see what their unit was, and I see what their home town and state. And you know, I have this thought: why are these young people listed in names of the dead? Why are they dying? Why have they been shot to death? How many people did they shoot, if any? Did they kill? Were they responsible for terror among 10-year-old Afghan children? Were they themselves terrorized? Did they scream out for their moms or their children or their spouses right before the darkness? I mean, it drives me crazy. I can't sit down and read the goddamn paper. Just sit down and read the paper. And that little section that the Times puts in there, names of the dead. There it is, names of the dead. Does that bother you? Do you pay any attention to that? Do you look at those names? Do they do it in your newspaper? Are you aware? Dead, dead, dead. 18, 19, 17, 17. Nah, it can't be 17. 23, 22, 21, 25, 40, every once in a while, 40. Oh my God, 40? 28, 19, 19, 26, names of the dead. Do you realize we're fighting? That's not the right word. Do you realize that we have troops in combat zones in two countries? Names of the dead. We'll be back. Stay with us, please.
Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
Yes, you are 21 past the hour. Blue is calling from Cyprus. Hello, Blue.
Hey, good day, Mike.
How are you?
Well, I'm a bit exhausted, really. We were headed from out of Kiev about an hour for Amman in Jordan, which would have been about 17 hours ago.
Mm.
And we were diverted by our dispatcher to Nicosia. And so haven't had any sleep at this point, but last night had dinner with a whole group of people. We've got a small hotel here that's frequented by commercial travelers and people like myself and tourists and so on. And a lot of Cypriots there, both Greeks and a couple of Turkish Cypriots and two Egyptian blokes, just ordinary working blokes from Egypt who apparently come over here all the time. And they're trying to decide whether or not it's safe to go back at this point. But
what's the consensus?
Well,
I would think not. If they're Egyptian, I would think that safety is one thing. If they are committed to what the people seem to be committed to, then I guess they should go back and roll the dice like everybody else, right?
Well, here's the point about this whole thing. The consensus at the table was, and this was, I think, fairly unanimous, among both Cypriots and these Egyptian types, they've got no doubt at all that Mubarak would not be doing what he's doing if he didn't have a clear green light from Washington and from Tel Aviv as well. I think initially there was some feeling, apparently, that the army wouldn't join in this, in quelling this this demonstration, this uprising.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been shown to be false.
Right.
And there's a lot of anger, a great deal of anger. And you have to understand that in Egypt, there's a secret police organization which is all pervasive. In other words, everything you do, everything you say is recorded. And
kind of like the United States.
Well, I was about to say. I'm glad you said it. I didn't have to say it this time.
Right,
but. There's a great deal of anger about the American role and the Israeli role. And so they're all just sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop, I think. And then to complicate matters even further, they have families at home.
Right.
And at one point I asked the question, I said, well, when you look at the United States, how do you feel about what's going on there? Because these people are not stupid. They're very well informed and they pay attention to what's going on. And they said, well, why isn't this happening in the United States? And I said, well, you've got to understand, I've been put right about all this. Americans have jobs and they've got families and, they're all poor. They can't afford to travel. They've got other things to do besides engaging in revolution. And,
you just never stop, do you?
Well, I mean, it was a legitimate question, Mike. I mean, here, talking to people.
Right.
So, that was greeted with the contempt that it deserves, of course. But there's a lot of anger, a great deal of anger. I don't know that they would have said those things to me if I'd been an American, but they knew I was Australian. I don't know how they knew that.
I don't either. How could they tell?
But because Egyptians are very courteous people, very polite people. But they know exactly who's pulling the strings here. And,
I would think so. You don't have a leader, quote, in power for almost 30 years, who, by the way, became leader when the previous leader was blown to pieces sitting right next to him. When it was time to get rid of Sadat, Mubarak, if you've seen that piece of old, I don't know if it was video, I guess it was video, Mubarak is sitting one seat away from Anwar Sadat when the Kalashnikovs and the Uzis go off and kill all those people, including Sadat. Mubarak, I think he got a superficial wound in his hand. He probably stepped on his own fingers to make it look like he was wounded, but you don't have that kind of situation for 30 years then without looking behind the curtain. Who's back here keeping this guy in power? Well, obviously, it's the United States, of course.
Not only that. Excuse me.
Hey, hold on a second, Blue. I have to do some commercials here. Just stay there, and I'll come back to you after we do these commercials for another couple of minutes. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Behind every door, the night looking people to kill or to make. The soldiers of peace are just changing the game.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour from Cyprus, we're talking with Blue. All right, go ahead.
Well, I apologize, Mike. I'm going to have to cut it short. My first officer and I have got to go out to the aircraft and offload or oversee the offloading of all the pallets that were going into Oman. And I don't know what they're going to do with those. I don't care, but then we've got to come back here and get about 10 hours of rest because we haven't slept at all.
Well, Jordan's about ready to belch up something also, isn't it?
Well, I think that's why we were diverted. I mean, they obviously weren't happy about us going in there. And then we're going on, after about 10 hours or so, we're going to go on to Zagreb in Croatia.
What's your what was your cargo in Jordan? Olive oil?
To be honest, I have no idea what it was. But
it wouldn't be weapons or anything, would it?
Well, I doubt it, considering what's going to happen after Zagreb, I don't know. But that's the joy of flying charters. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, be careful. Watch out for dark things flying around in the sky. The world is you understand, of course, that the world is collapsing. Back in Queensland, you know what happened there the other day with that funny name cyclone.
Well. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit unnerving to be away and to be away for longer than I'm usually away. But we're in a fortunate position where we are. Our home is in a fortunate position, so we're not quite as exposed as some of the other people. But no, I'd really rather be at home at this point, to be truthful with you. Especially when you come to a place like this and you see what's going on. You know, we're only a couple of hundred kilometers away from either Jordan or Egypt,
right,
and Syria, and you get the sense that the whole thing's about to blow. Everybody's waiting to see what Israel's going to do because everyone knows that whenever there's shooting in the Middle East, that Israel's got something to do with it, one way or the other.
I think the next one to go. Let's see. Already in Yemen, it's happening. Jordan is right on the brink, but I think the next one to really blow is going to be Syria. I know a lot of Syrians here in the Atlanta area, immigrants who from Aleppo, from Damascus, and they have been very, 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 very pissed off with the ruling family, and especially when it was handed off to what's his name's son,
Bashir Assad is
the
guy's name,
right? Assad and his father, and I think I really think Syria is the next one that is going to flare up and get the attention of CNN.
Look, Mike, I've got to run, but I'm planning. I'll probably be alone. I'll probably be by myself, but I'm planning at this point, at any rate, on seeing you on the 19th of March.
There you go. We'll be there.
We'll see what happens, but take care and have. And you go on that cruise, don't you, tomorrow?
Saturday.
Saturday. Well, enjoy your cruise and bring back some seashells and so on.
I'll do it.
And
right.
Don't drink too many Mai Tais.
Never happened. Thanks, Blue. Take care.
Cheers, Mike.
All right. Take care. Yeah, don't forget, March 19th, in Washington, D.C., Lafayette Park, right across the street from the White House. There will be an interesting day. I hope you're going to be there. I hope you're going to be there. Steven in Burbank.
Hello, Mike.
How you doing?
Well, you know how I react to that question. But anyway, I'm hearing that, what's happening in the Arab countries, the so-called nation states, you know, they have had this 30 years of hardcore down on it oppression. But the sense is that they communicate with each other. They consider themselves to be part of a society. They consider themselves to be neighbors to each other. And that, I've also heard that the disparities and the inequalities here in this country are worse in some cases, than it is over there. And how come it isn't happening here and it's happening there? And the perspective is that it's a consumer society, and there's been a lot of talk with us, people of our types about the cult of the individual,
mm-hmm.
and then the illusion of central position,
mm-hmm.
and that here we're just all like selfish pigs, but over there they feel themselves to be a part of a society.
Right, right.
And so that could explain it. Add to that the fact of, like I mentioned before, consumerism, materialism, ownership, and all that. You know, we are 5% of the world's population, consuming 23% of the world's resources.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the fossil fuel that goes into building that, and plus, you know, farming it out to cheap labor all over the rest of the world for the exploitation of cheap labor. And so it just has to blow, but because we're isolated, because we're alienated from each other, we aren't allowed to communicate in terms that can really bring about a sense of what it would take to make things better for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And
part of the problem here in this country, and I really believe this, we we're a nation of immigrants. Those of us who are not native Americans, somewhere back in our ancestry, but everybody else, unless you can claim a relationship of some sort, a blood relationship with Native American nations or tribes, then you you're an immigrant. You are not from here. You may have been born here. I was born here. But, you know, all I have to do is go back to my grandparents. They weren't born here. So you have all these different cultures and ethnic groups and nationalities that came to the United States for, nobody came here for the weather. They didn't come here for the scenery. They came here because they were told that they could make money and great mountains of it, and if they played their cards right, they could find those streets of gold. I mean, you can go all the way back to the 15th century and all the way up to the 21st and find people who are still looking for the cities and the streets of gold. So there is not a cultural cohesiveness here. What is American culture? Is it fast food? There is not... this is not a homogeneous population. We are made up of all kinds of different little groups and categories, and We are hyphenated, most of us. People who come to this country don't like to give up their traditions from home. I grew up smelling the duck's blood soup and pierogies and Italian dishes and Jewish food and you know, what was American? I think our family was American. We ate oatmeal, but then no, because my grandmother would make stuff I can't even pronounce. So here we are. The Egyptians are Egyptians, and they have been for 7,000 years. But the Americans are just this amalgamation of people from all over. And I think that's the reason, maybe, perhaps, that we can't seem to get our act together and organize and say, I don't know, maybe this is just a great big-ass rationale that I'm putting together here. But do you think there's any truth to it? Because we're a nation of immigrants, where none of us are from here.
Well, that's part of it. But what is also a part of it is the ideal, you know, because the reason I love this place is because from the Enlightenment, we got thinkers, you know, who came up with something called the Constitution. And I know that the Constitution was constructed to help protect the wealth of the rich white boys.
Right.
But in effect, we look at the preamble, we look at Article 5, we look at the Bill of Rights, and it is a living document. And you know what? I may be going out on a limb here, but I would like to see a constitutional convention that ratifies Marxian economics. I'm so sorry I had to get crazy with, you know, being like where Tom from Arizona is coming from. But, you know, I'm a little bit, what you might call a rogue thinker. You know, I don't really believe anything, but I only believe what I know to be true. And what I know to be true is economics is the distribution of wealth. And wealth is nutrition. Wealth is a place to stay. Wealth is to play chess when you want to play chess. And if you have to go tend to the community garden, it's time to harvest. And tough doodly, you know, go out and do your job. You know, pick those tomatoes, you know, tow that row. But it doesn't have to be, you know, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. It doesn't have to be child labor in mines that collapse and fall down on people. You know, there's rationale. We work through reason. We work through logic, and whatever it is that helps promote a better life for everybody, including our fellow Earthlings, the animals.
Yeah, what a radical idea!
Radical. Yeah.
You must be some kind of a socialist or something.
Well, I've been accused of work. Well, it depends on who I'm talking to.
Well,
you know?
I hear you. I hear you. Absolutely. Stephen, thanks. Always good to hear from you. Take care, okay?
Okay, boss.
All right, man. Appreciate your call. You know, laugh if you will, or get snotty or snarky or whatever, but I think freedom really can come. With a system based on the principles of democratic socialism. Look it up. Spend some time figuring it out. I'm not talking about totalitarian socialism. I'm talking about democratic. Oh, never mind. We'll be right back.
Radiation underground in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby. Oh, mercy, mercy.
Before the hour, don't forget, tomorrow night Brad Friedman will be filling in, and all next week. So play nice, and we'll be back Monday week. Victor is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hello, Victor.
Hi, how's it going, Mike?
Fair to partly cloudy.
Yeah, it's pretty cloudy here. A lot of snow. You mentioned global revolution before, and, you know, I think the number one priority for that would be our planet. gets clean air and clean water. And there's a guy who's been fighting for that for almost 50 years in this country, and that would be Ralph Nader.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be for electing him prime minister if there were to be a prime minister of the planet.
There are a lot of people in this country. They just tend not to get the attention for obvious reasons. The corporate-owned press in this country doesn't want to hear any talk about democratic socialism.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders is looked at as some kind of an oddball. Oh, my God, the only democratic socialist ever to be elected to the U.S. Congress. Nobody talks about Eugene Debs. Nobody talks about the socialist movement in this country that has attempted. And again, it's difficult to bring this stuff up because most Americans, when they think of socialism, they immediately think of communism. That's how we've been conditioned in this country. And to use the term democratic in front of the word socialism still doesn't register with the average American. But, you know, almost a century ago, the idea was being put out there that liberal capitalism was on its deathbed, and it had to be. It had to be replaced with democratic socialism, or I don't know if they put it in these terms, but the working class was going to be put back into a feudal state, and everything would collapse. Now I don't know if back in 1910 or 1920, people were that articulate about it. I'm sure they were. But this is nothing new. For some reason, there was not the will to move us away from this most destructive form, economic form. And anyone who doesn't think it's destructive, Jesus, God, just take a look around the planet.
Yeah, I know, the water.
Everything. Everything.
Yeah, with this oil fracking and the salts and so on and so forth. And it's just, I'm 48, and I saw Nader back in 78 here talk a couple of times. And then, you know, a couple of years later when Reagan was voted, you know, I just, you know, 1980, I turned 18. But I'm just disappointed in all the boomers, my age and older, all the baby boomers who have, you know, we've grown up with Nader. We know what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, it's just sad, you know. I mean, if we would have all gotten behind Nader back in 2000 instead of Gore, you know. I don't know if, you know, I think all your listeners should look up the DVD, An Unreasonable Man,
about
Ralph Nader.
About Nader, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know you have a teacher out in the Bay Area, Kay Petrini. She should turn her students on to that video. And, you know, anyone who's listening as a teacher from grade school on up through college should have their students, you know, history or sociology teachers watch this. You can get it over Netflix and, you know, any cool DVD.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And would that more people in the United States could at least enter into a discussion or debate or consciousness about the issues that people like Ralph Nader and Eugene Debs and Norman Thomas have brought up repeatedly. If Kay is listening, I'm sure she'll probably get that DVD. Victor, thank you. I've got to move
sure.
on. I appreciate you checking in. I hope you call again. Thanks so much. Steve in Austin, Texas. You got about two minutes here, pal. Sorry.
First of all, have a great cruise.
Thank you.
And second of all, I was telling Kathy, for us old enough to remember, Gamal Nasser?
Yes.
Nasser was the president.
He was the one
in Egypt when he cooperated with the Soviets, and he was vilified by the U.S.
Right. He was the one that overthrew. I'm having trouble hearing you here. He was the one that overthrew King Farouk. And he came out of the military. The last three leaders, going all the way back to the overthrow of the king, over half a century, have all been from the military in Egypt. Egypt has never known real democracy. They went from monarchy to military dictatorship with and that's all they've ever known. So it's not just the past 30 years. Let's call it the past three generations that the Egyptians have had to deal with this.
Yeah.
So no wonder they've exploded.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, and everybody in the world at that time wanted the Soviets to rein in Nasser.
Yeah.
He was moving way too fast. He was radical. And I believe the Soviets actually built them a few dams and helped with their infrastructure.
The Aswan Dam, because the West wouldn't do it. But what Nasser was about was pan-Arab socialism. He was, and that was his allegiance with, or his dedication to the Soviet Union, which was a big mistake because the Soviets were no more interested in socialism than they were interested in eating their own feet. They were totalitarian communists, and there's a big difference. Hey, there's the music. Steve, I have to leave it there. I appreciate your call, sir. I hope we talk again. Take care. All right. I'll see you a week from Monday. Oh, my God. That long, huh? All right. Brad Friedman will be sitting in tomorrow night and all next week. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Thinking.